The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
Welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kirk Herbstreit, David Pollock, and Kevin Negandhi with you. If you enjoy the podcast, subscribe, rate, and review. We certainly appreciate the feedback. Plenty to discuss this Monday as we take a closer look at Ohio State and their path to a playoff if they do not qualify to play enough games in the Big Ten, and then how that would play out and how it would have a domino effect on other teams around them. When it comes to the playoff conversation, big stuff for the committee to tackle on Tuesday night. Also, we highlight Sarah Fuller, what she did in breaking a barrier in the Power Five, and what it means for Vanderbilt football moving forward after they just fired Derek Mason. And we take another look at the Alabama offense. Pollock has some strong opinions, and he comes correct with Mac Jones and what's different each week that we see in this offense and how they continue to get better. Well, we're going to begin with Kirk Herbstreit and Pollock talking about Notre Dame and why they can say potentially they're the number one team in the land. Enjoy. Guys, let's start this podcast because, I was really impressed, and I think both you guys were, for what we saw on Friday, and that is Notre Dame football and what they did at North Carolina. Not so much the outcome is one thing. It's how they looked in the second half against Carolina's offense and what they did. And also this team defensively, they're just a different team. It's a different Notre Dame team. We've been saying it all season, but we each and every week they get tested and we're like, all right, let's get some more information, some more data. And Herbie, let's start with you because you were on the call with Fowler. What did you see from this team where you feel like they could be in the number one conversation?
I think that one way to, that's why Alabama's been able to do it, but I think one way to be kind of kryptonite to these spread attacks and these offensive attacks is to be able to win the line of scrimmage. You know, I know that that's old school approach, but it still helps. It's still effective because of how it changes the game for you. And Notre Dame did that against, especially defensively. That was the thing that stood out about the game is the first two drives. It was like, oh boy, here we go. We got a potential shootout on our hands. Cause I went in thinking that Notre Dame would have a hard time with Carolina's skill, especially on the perimeter. Because I do think Notre Dame at corner is potentially vulnerable. But, man, to Clark Lee's credit, their defense had a plan. They made adjustments. They started blitzing those inside backers like crazy. And they started just blowing up the run game. And once they took the run game away, the run-pass option of North Carolina's, it can be lethal at times. They just couldn't get anything going. And so, and David will tell you, when you compete – keep two safeties back on the hash marks and still blow up a run game on every series, it's going to be a long day for an offense. And that's what they were able to do. And then offensively, even without their starting center and starting right guard, they did enough in the run game to get those tight ends involved. And Ian Book is kind of a wizard. He's back there playing backyard football and razzle dazzle and throwing it up. And those big receivers are good at going up even when they're covered and making plays. It's fun. It's a fun team to watch. And David, I think that I said it on game day, the biggest difference, and we saw it, I think, in Athens last year, and we're seeing it when they play Clemson this year in North Carolina. When this Notre Dame gets on a big stage, rather than being like, oh gosh, we're nervous or getting exposed because they're fraudulent, this team almost welcomes the big stage and has a kind of a, you know, chip on their shoulder, screw you kind of mentality that they want to take it out and show everybody that this is a different year. And so this team's real to me. I'm incredibly impressed with their mentality and their physicality. And then they got a quarterback that's an X factor.
Well, and to me, this all starts and stops and ends and listen, me and Reese got an awesome debate. It was a Friday night, I guess, when y'all were calling the game and I was texting back and forth and I was like, I finally got a great comp for Ian Book. And the last, by the way, this the last three games, Ian Book is not what we've seen throughout Ian Book's career. So let's be clear. This isn't the same guy. Like he's taken a quantum leap forward and he's done an unbelievable, you know, Kirk, I feel like he's finally like just he doesn't care about the ramifications. He doesn't care if Coach Kelly's going to turn, you know, bright red on the sidelines and curse him out. It's almost like, I'm just going to go play my game and do it. And it's, he's got the Johnny Manziel. He's got the, just make it happen. Just, you know, two guys coming at him and he pitches it with two hands, you know, like, don't worry about the end result. You've seen enough football now. And by the way, they have to win like that. This isn't an offense that's going to win with exquisite receivers beating, winning on routes really quickly. And I don't think they're going to consistently win in the RPO game. They can bludgeon your face. They can play with multiple tight ends and make things very difficult on you in that aspect. And then you got multiple guys that can do different things. And it's just, to me, it's about the development. It's the evolution of Ian Book turning into Johnny Football and just scrambling around and just making plays and making things happen and not worrying about consequences for his actions. That takes this team from being a really good team that's kind of on the fringe to a team that you say now that, you know, you're going to put them on the short list to win a national title.
I would add that, and we talked about this during the broadcast, there's a big difference right now in the way he's playing, Ian Book's playing, because of the relationship that he has with Tommy Rees. But Tommy Rees has been such a positive influence, a guy that not long ago was under center. And I don't know how many times I called Tommy Rees games with Brian Kelly's jugulars coming out of his neck and his face,
yes,
bright red. And Tommy Rees just taking it on national TV. And so and Brian Kelly's a different guy today than when Tommy played. And he would be the first one to tell you that was intentional to try to change that. But he handles him in such a good way. And they communicate throughout the week in such a good way. And I think when you combine that with the trust factor and the skill people around him, I think it's a freeing experience for a quarterback who's played a lot of games. It allows him to just, you know, we talked about it in the game, David, you just said it allows him to turn it loose. It allows him not to feel concerned about potential consequences. And he's been pretty good his whole career, but he's had lapses. He's had moments where you kind of scratch your head and think, what was that? Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. So let's not think that he was, I remember when he came in years ago, it was like almost a settling effect on the Notre Dame offense. When he came in, I think it was maybe a Wake Forest game going way back. So he's always had an ability to make plays. I just think he's a senior. He's played a ton of games. The game's slowing down for him. And he just looks like, doesn't he look like a guy that in middle school, he was a point guard. He was a shortstop in baseball. He was a quarterback. He probably is a scratch golfer. Like, he's just that guy that just can do it. And he's finally playing consistently. But make sure we all appreciate the job that Tommy Rees is doing with him, because I think it's affecting his approach mentally as much as anything.
Guys, if there's one specific play, you know, alluding to the Manziel and you guys talking about the difference between what we've seen in the last month to previous years, is that pitch on third down late. And you're like, oh, no, what are you doing? But it was such a smart play because he knew the defender's back was turned, so he can make that play. In previous years, he makes that, and then, you know, something bad happens, and then we see Brian Kelly really upset on the sidelines. And that's the thing that stood out. He's playing with so much confidence that this ability that, hey, it's okay if I make a mistake. I'm comfortable with making a risk here and taking this situation into my hands. Completely different quarterback when it comes to the confidence level outside of that Clemson performance. And it's been great. It's refreshing. Let's switch gears here and talk about 1A and one. That is Alabama. The Iron Bowl, guys, usually in previous years would be tightly contested. Obviously, no fan environment, no Nick Saban in this one. But my goodness. And Pollock, I want to start with you. Mac Jones continues to impress. Devontae Smith has taken the next level with Waddle out. What are you seeing from this offense compared to last year and this year, where Jones is taking it next step here with Sarkisian?
It's incredible, man. First of all, just think about the dudes they've had at wide receiver the last 2 years. They've got four first round picks on their roster, and maybe down the road, by the way, after this year, now it'll be even more. But I mean, you think about Judy goes first round. Ruggs goes first round. Waddle, now Waddle gets hurt, and you replace him. But Devontae Smith obviously has been Freaky Friday, unbelievable. We talked about him a couple weeks ago, just staying for his senior year and what it's meant and what he's done and what he's accomplished. But it's just – it's incredible, man. It's incredible to watch. And there's just – we talked about this offense not having any holes in it. There's not a single weakness. You know, there's not a single – like you look at Notre Dame. We just talked about Notre Dame, and Ian Book's playing out of his mind, and the offensive line's really good, and tight ends are good. We didn't talk about any big-time receivers. You know, Alabama has that with the offensive line, with a bludgeoning tailback. I mean, just it's unbelievable to watch year in and year. It's just amazing, Kirk, to think about all the title runs and all the defense for Nick Saban for all those years, and just and how it's completely flipped now. And this offense is a juggernaut year in, year out. Like, they've completely sold out for it. You know, this year's system is different than it was last year, because it used to be just primarily RPO, and now you watch Mac Jones play action, his pocket presence, and his develop. I tell you what, he's done the Joe Burrow from a year ago. Like, he's been the guy that just literally went from really good or good moments, great moments, and then bad moments to, holy cow, this dude can't miss.
This is why, and I know David loves to make bold statements, this is why you don't make bold statements about Alabama and Nick Saban and Steve Sarkisian, because when they lost Waddle, and David, I like to have fun with him, I like a lot of people thought, okay, what's going to happen to Alabama's offense? And I think one thing we've learned over time is let's give them a few games to figure out what the adjustment's going to be. Let's give Sark a chance to see what he's going to do. He loses the most dynamic player in the country, and we can pull our hair out and say, oh my God, what are they going to do? Or we can see how they tweak, and they've tweaked. You know, I think they've become a little bit more physical. He's doing a ton of pre-snap stuff. He's getting matchups now because he still has Mechie. You know, he still has an ability to win besides Devontae Smith. This young freak, Jaleel Billingsley, is coming on as a tight end with 4-star.
You mean receiver?
He's basically. Yeah, I mean, so what we're seeing is what I kind of expected. It's what Sarkisian has an ability to do. He's probably, even though he's at Alabama, he's kind of forgotten, you know, and I know he stepped in, and that's why when I said on game day, they're not going to miss a beat without Nick Saban. I didn't necessarily mean that Nick Saban's a Nick Saban. I mean, it's like a Bill Belichick, but knowing that Sark has been a head coach and knowing the advantage they had in personnel against Auburn, you just didn't feel that they were going to miss a beat. And they went out there and did what they needed to do. But the quarterback play of Mac Jones, you talk about a guy that was a forgotten commodity. And, I mean, when they signed Bryce Young, first it was, we got Jalen Hurts and we got Tua. And then it was, oh, my God, we got Tua's little brother. And then it was, oh, my God, did you hear we might get this kid out of California, Bryce Young? Oh, my God, this is going to be great. It was like, forget about Mac Jones. Even their own fan base wasn't impressed with Mac Jones. And so this kid has a built-in another player that has a chip on his shoulder, and he plays that way. He's not slowing down. His accuracy on his deep ball is insane, and I think he's just really comfortable. They do a good job of putting a plan together that no matter who they're playing, they figure out where the weaknesses are. You got the threat of the physicality of Najee, and then they play action and do what they need to do and they find matchups. So the beat goes on for Bama, you know, despite not having all their pieces in play. And they're still tough for anybody to match up with.
And by the way, Kevin, real quick, I know you, sorry to interrupt, but like, listen, we can talk all we want about their offense. Their defense has been every bit of impressive. Remember, they started the season getting beat like they stole something, you know, 30 points a game leading into that Ole Miss game. And now they've allowed 57 points in the last 5 games. I mean, they've been – listen, the development, the secondary was 3 out of 4 guys that were new. Malachi Moore playing the slot is brand new, by the way. It looks like he's going to be a star, continuing to evolve and develop. But they've just, since the second half of that Georgia game, dude, it's been lights out, and it's been Bama defense. So now they're showing you, too, on that side that they're growing and getting better and evolving. So let's just not forget the GOAT's there for a reason. And Nick Saban's just doing what he always does. And he always has a lot of talent, but now he's taking the talent and developing it. Even though they're younger, they're making strides along the way, and they look like the best team in the country, and it doesn't look close.
It's now time for the All-State Playoff Predictor segment with Kirk Herbstreit. Let's see where he thinks protection is going to really matter this week. And remember, get better protected with All-State. You've never been in better hands. And as we get ready for December, Herbie, it feels like there's more clarity with the playoff predictor with, of course, Alabama on top. How does it look for you?
Well, as you know, every week we're going to be taking a look at the All-State Playoff Predictor. We've been doing it all year. The All-State Playoff Predictor is not ranking the current teams. It's projecting the top team's chances of making a college football playoff. I'll be pointing out where protection can really change the game. And remember, get better protected with All-State. You've never been in better hands. And, you know, with me, I typically look at these teams and kind of rank them. And I think that's the only difference with me in the playoff predictor. Like for me, I have Alabama basically 1A, Notre Dame 1B, and I would put Clemson in there at 3 and Ohio State, which is kind of maybe a little bit of an asterisk, at 4. We'll have to wait and see on Ohio State if they get a chance to play the next couple weeks. Those would be my top four. And I would have Florida still up around 5, the Cincinnati Bearcats at 6, and A&M and BYU. All kind of in a cluster there, truly, with A&M and Florida and BYU and Cincinnati. All those teams for me are kind of all together. And so when you get into a cluster in that playoff room, remember, that's when they bring in the tiebreakers, head-to-head, conference champion, common opponent. Things like that separates clusters if you're in that committee room. And I know people from A&M would say, well, we beat Florida, so we would win that debate over Florida, which would be true if Florida didn't play Alabama. If Florida plays Alabama and they're conference champions, even though they lost head-to-head, they would trump A&M and go ahead of them. And the way they've been playing, that's kind of why I have Florida ahead of A&M. But that's where I have it right now.
Interesting with the playoff predictor. Of course, Alabama nearly 96% to make the playoff, followed by Ohio State at 78%, Notre Dame at 68%, and Clemson at 50%. And then you have Cincinnati there, according to the All-State Playoff Predictor, at 35%, followed by BYU at 23%. We're going to learn, of course, much more on Tuesday night with the playoff committee and how they use the eye test. And this eye test will be a big discussion on this pod, as well as Tuesday night, as well as Wednesday with the reaction when it comes to the schedule imbalance conversation surrounding Ohio State. Much more on that as the pod continues. Guys, the biggest topic that we were probably going to tackle, and you guys had to, of course, deal with it on Saturday morning with the cancellation of Ohio State versus Illinois. It will be a huge topic with how everything plays out in the Big Ten. And obviously, the Big Ten championship game scenario is going to be one discussed because of the minimum requirement in the conference to play a certain amount of games. And, you know, the way it looks, Ohio State has to play Michigan State and Michigan if they want to qualify for the Big Ten. But let's look at some scenarios here. If they don't get the chance to play Michigan State, and then you have a scenario, guys, where they could play six games because that December 19th meeting, and let's just say Indiana plays Northwestern in the Big Ten championship game. What happens here where potentially Ohio State plays Wisconsin, that cross game, right? And then they get to six games, and there is no minimum requirement with the playoff. That's a ton of information I've just tossed out there, and we will see how this plays out. But Herbie, let's start with you with what's going on and a scenario out there that Ohio State plays Wisconsin and they go 6-0, and then you watch Indiana play Northwestern, and then the committee has to tackle this issue. Hey, is Ohio State in, even though they didn't get the chance to even get to the, you know, the conference championship?
Well, first, let's just, I mean, as we're taping this on a Monday morning, nothing's been decided. You know, we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. It seems like the wheels are turning. Columbus, you know, they're trying to figure out a way to put a cap on this amount of players that have been impacted by COVID. It did not look good Friday or even Saturday. Looks like the testing has gone better in a better direction on Sunday. We'll find out. I think they do more testing on Tuesday. And I think they'll finally make a decision on whether or not they can play. It sounds like they've not passed that threshold where the Big Ten pulls the plug and says you have to shut things down the way they did in Madison. So that's where they are as we speak. So they're hoping to play. I don't know who's been impacted by the virus, but they're hoping to potentially have a roster of players to go and play in East Lansing Saturday, because I think they're desperate. If Big Ten doesn't pull the plug, they're desperate to play for obvious reasons, to try to get that fifth game in. And then I think they would be fine for the Michigan game to get the sixth game in. So I think in their mind, they're still hoping to get six games and qualify for the Big Ten championship if they were to win out. So that's that. We'll find out what happens in the next few days. If they don't, if they miss Michigan State and they get to Michigan and they're able to win, by the way, holy cow, why did I not pick Penn State? Why did I not Penn State? But anyway, if they get to that fifth game, they play Michigan, of course, they'll win that game. And then they would have the last game, as you said, maybe against Wisconsin. I think it you know, we're playing hypotheticals. You know, I guess assuming Alabama wins out, which is not a given with Florida and Kyle Trask, right? Notre Dame, Clemson, what's going to happen there? You know, I mean, as we're sitting here assuming, well, Indiana, Northwestern, if the Buckeyes don't make it, what happens if Clemson and Notre Dame split? What happens if Florida beats Alabama? The door is shut is what happens on a lot of teams. So the real scenario would be if Florida beat Alabama and Clemson beat Notre Dame and Ohio State wins out. I mean, you could have some real interesting who's going to get left out. I guess it was what I would say. Would it if Florida beat Alabama and Clemson beat Notre Dame and Ohio State won out? I mean, how would you pick your teams there at the end? It would be because you'd have five basically that could be in there. Florida would be in because they beat Bama. So, I mean, we could go through all this, but I don't know. I think at the end of the day, David, he's saying if Ohio State only plays six, would they have a legitimate shot against teams that are out there playing potentially 8, 9, 10 and up to 11 games? I think they all would look at Ohio State as one of the top four teams, but you're projecting and guessing what the committee would do. Would six games be enough in the middle of COVID and the pandemic? I think it's impossible to know or what they would do. We could guess, we could speculate. What is six enough in this era, knowing that they're one of the top four teams? Playing that extra game on championship weekend on the 19th would obviously help their cause if they went out and made a statement.
Yeah, I'm not guessing. I talked to everybody in the committee room. I've already talked to every single one of them. I know exactly what the number is, Kirk, so just listen up, all right? Hey, I think personally, that was obviously sarcasm. I haven't talked to anybody, nor do I. I think, and this is going to sound, I don't know how it's going to sound, but I think Cincinnati not playing last week helped that cause for Ohio State. Because I think if Cincinnati gets to 11-0 and Ohio State's 5-0, God, that's hard to overcome. Just to me personally. And if they finish with beating Tulsa twice, beating BYU if they get that game scheduled, beating BYU, Tulsa, like, you know, something like that, dude, that would be hard. It would be hard for me to fathom listen, that'd be a tall task for Cincinnati to do, but it'd be hard for me to fathom them getting left out. I think Ohio State has to get to six. Just in my head, as far as a hurdle, when I look at Cincinnati right now being 8-0, and by the way, this is aside from what Kirk said, this is if Florida loses, and this is if Notre Dame wins, because it takes out spots, obviously, if those other scenarios happen. But if you're going to match them with a Cincinnati – for that last spot, man, I think Cincinnati finishing with BYU, possibly Tulsa, possibly, you know, another American game, something like that, it'd be hard to overcome. I think Ohio State has to at least get the six to give themselves a really good opportunity.
Now, there's also more drama. We got, obviously, when we're taping this on a Monday morning, we got news coming in that Michael Penix, that leg injury, is going to keep him out for the rest of the season. That's at least what I'm seeing Bruce Feldman reporting right now, and Bruce is on it. And you got to see, Indiana's got Wisconsin this coming weekend, right? So that puts it, and then they've got Purdue at the end of the season before we talk about any conversation of the Big Ten championship. So there's a lot of things going on here and scenarios that will be very fluid in this conversation. And Now, who knows if Cincinnati will get the chance to play a BYU team. And with what you guys are saying, and the minimum of potentially five or six games, that rules out what we're going to maybe see from the Pac-12, considering what's happened to USC. And their game now has moved to Sunday against Washington State. And our fingers are crossed that they could play, and with Oregon losing and Washington finding a way. So, again, very fluid situation heading into December and on how these things play out. And we've got more news coming in. I mean, in the last 24 hours, obviously coaching changes, but like one storyline that we were all talking about is what incentive will players have to play if their teams are out of it as the season goes on. And the news is Terrace Marshall of LSU deciding to opt out on Sunday. Samuel Cosmi, the Texas offensive tackle, Florida State defensive back Asante Samuel Jr., all three of them opting out. For me, Terrace deciding to do this, It's in his best interest. He thinks about that. Of course, I'm playing on Sundays down the road. But the next two games, your best challenge to get on tape is Alabama and Florida. And maybe the concern is I'm not sure who's going to be the quarterback and tossing me the football, so I don't want to risk anything. Herbie, your thoughts on this and the state of where college football is right now, because this is such a unique thing, and there's so many scenarios playing out in a pandemic.
Well, I think that's the key is, COVID has been a challenge on so many levels, on not just obviously sports, but just the country, the whole entire world. And so just to look at it and through our lens of college football, if a player decides that it's in his best interest this season that, hey, you know, the season, for the most part, we're done. I got to worry about myself and my future, and you know, I'm rolling the dice every time I come out to practice and put myself in in this situation. I'd rather be either isolated or I'd rather be out training or whatever it is. I mean, I it's foreign to me to think that way, but I can understand, I guess, how in these situations players would feel that. I look at it. I'm a little concerned about the sport's health overall, just about, is this a 2020 thing, or is this a, hey, we're on the back end of COVID and we're starting to go back to what we would consider our normal life as far as college football with full stadiums and, you know, back to normal, a normal season? Is this going to be what we see? And if it is, I think it's really unhealthy that all we're thinking about is if my team is in the playoff hunt, then I'll play. And if my team, as soon as we lose a few games and we're basically mathematically eliminated, I'm out. You know, I'm going to go to Phoenix or Miami. I'm going to start training. By the way, if players feel that way, then go for it. The sport will move on. Like, teams will move on without you. It's just the way it is. But I feel bad for these players that their roots aren't deep enough into a program that would even be a thought, let alone that they would execute it. Again, COVID year, I understand it, but I'm saying in a normal year, if that would be a thought, I just feel bad for guys that wouldn't be as, I guess, roots. How rooted are you into a program? Like, if you said to David Pollack his junior year, senior year, hey, you know, you guys just lost to Florida. What I'm just using it as an example. You can't get to Atlanta. And he's like, well, I'm out. You know, I got to get ready to start training, get ready for first round. I don't know. I would be shocked if David Pollack did that. And I know that's a different era. And I don't have my head in the sand, but that's become the new norm doesn't mean it's right. Things that change don't necessarily mean that they're right. And if moving on, this happens and continues to happen, then I'd be really careful who I recruited. I'd be really careful what type of character and personality and person I brought into my program, because I do not want players on my team that are not invested in the team and what we're doing collectively as a group. That's how I would approach it if I were a coach.
I remember, Kirk, and I don't know if you remember this or not, but week one, we talked about this or early in the season. And I said this was a trend that was going to continue. And I don't think it's going to stop, by the way. I don't think this year is not going to change it. you know, listen, with the transfer rules now, what they are too, people are going to jump ship as much as possible now to try to go to a championship contender. And then when their teams are out of contention, I think we're going to continue to see this. Do I like it? Heck no. And I want to say the other word, but I'll try not to curse, but I hate it. I can't stand it. I think it's a societal problem that we have now. It's a me society, man. It's a me culture. It is very tough now to build any, and listen, we've talked about this for years, right? With social media and all the me that goes on with this stuff, you have the right and you have the decision to leave your team, and you can do it. And by the way, I have the right to think however I want about this. So don't tell me I'm wrong about it. These kids have the right to stay and fight. I had I was projected to be a first round pick after my junior year, Kirk, you know that. I decided to stay with my team and finish. Like, we lost games early on the season and we're out of the contention. That was never a thought. Have times changed? Sure, times have changed. But you know what? There are some people that in lower ranks of football, by the way, like that if this continued to be a trend and people you know, wanted to change the way they recruited, there are people that will 100% go to a school and be all in. Those people still do exist. There might not be as many, but those people do exist that want to fight for their team, that want to be there for their team, no matter what happens, no matter what the situation is. I think we saw it with bowl games years ago with people opting out. We saw this year, COVID obviously changes the scenario a little bit, but I think we'd be foolish to say that this is not going to be part of the norm when teams start to get out of contention in the future, that I think people will do this in the future too, as much as I absolutely can't stand it.
I would just add that we talked about this before we came on. If this generation of players, not all of them, but a percentage of players, if your approach is, if we can't make it to the playoff, then these games don't matter, then with that mindset, we should only Clemson, Georgia, Alabama, Oklahoma, Ohio State, maybe throw in Penn State. We should just play seven or eight teams at the beginning of the year. Everyone else should just train for the NFL combine all year. Don't even play football. Because if that's the mindset, is we should just lock in on the teams that are trying to make it to the playoff. If once you're out of the playoff, or if that's all that matters, then what's the point in playing? What's East Carolina have to play for? You know, what's Wake Forest have to play for? What do the Virginia Cavaliers have to play for? What's Minnesota or Purdue or, I don't know, Army? All the teams in the MAC, all the teams in the Mountain West, the Cal Bears, Washington State. Like, what do these teams have to play for? If all you care about is your individual career or making it to the playoff, oh, we're out of the playoff, I'm out. Like, if that's it, then is that good? Is that good for the sport? If that's, you're going to check out once your team is out of making a run, your team's out of it before the season starts with the system that we have set up right now. So why wait? Just don't play. Don't play at all. Take the whole year off and just train and be done with it. I'd rather have guys just skip their entire year than go through six games. I'm out of here. Like, just don't play. Don't play at all.
Now, how do you guys view this? Because I totally get what you guys are saying. And this has changed it feels like it has changed in the last decade. And one of the things that has really stood out too is coaches leaving their programs in December for another job, and then leaving some of these players stranded to go into a bowl game without a coaching staff or half the coaching staff. And sometimes I feel terrible for those players where I'm like, what's the example here? These guys see their coaches fight for them. And then, you know, in the second week of December, they've got to help the next program because they just got another job, and then they leave. And then that team, you know, is playing for an assistant coach or underperforms, and they're emotionally upset because they just lost their guy who said he was going to be with them. You know, and there are a lot of different scenarios, and it's not just a broad brush we're painting here with the players individually as well. What do you say to that? Because, you know, we've seen this trend of coaches leaving, and it feels like, hey, the players have to figure it out.
and they counted on their word, and now they're backing out as well. How does that play out in your mind as well, Herbie?
I say deal with it. That coach has earned the right to be able to be in a position to leave one school and go to another. He started out as a GA, grinded his ass off to finally become a position coach. And then 5 years later, maybe he became a coordinator. And then 5 or 6, 7, 8 years later, maybe became a head coach. He's earned the right to jump and go to another school. You know what you've earned? Nothing. You've earned nothing. You're a college football player who's 18, 19, 20 years old. That coach owes you nothing when it comes to that. He's got to make a decision for his family. Go for it. He's earned that right. That's like you starting your first day at SportsCenter, first week or first 6 months of SportsCenter. And I don't know who the main SportsCenter guy was when you first got there, but let's say he got a different schedule than you got. Let's say he got few more perks than you got. Now he's been there for 23 years, mind you, but you've been there for 6 months and you're looking at him like that's BS, man. How come he's doing that? That's not fair. It's called he's effing earned it with 23 years of grinding. He can do that. And you can sit there in your corner and either get better and keep grinding yourself or leave. That's what you can do. Those are your options. It's just
I didn't think I could love you any more than I
did. I've got a big smile on my face because I'm just scenario.
Like so these guys about, the coach can leave, but the player can't. Yeah. If I went to Ohio State and I went and John Cooper was the coach and 3 years in, he left to become the head coach somewhere else. I'd be like, who's our head coach? Who are we bringing in? Who's the new head coach? Well, they're still looking. Okay. Let's keep working out. All right. Hey, I'm hearing such and such. Cool. I hope they bring in a good offense. We're still working out. And then they hire a coach. And then away you go. That's what you do. That's what your right is as a college football player. Shut your mouth and work out. You have no right and quit complaining that a coach left for a better job. He's earned that right to be able to leave to go become another coach at another school.
Hey, Kevin, you know what happens? And I like the SportsCenter analogy too, but this is going to happen our whole life. This is going to happen as you get older, right? Like CEOs, managers, people that have put in time equity, they're going to ask you to do things in your life to rally, to come help us accomplish this awesome mission, this awesome goal. And they're going to get a promotion and they're going to move on. And guess what? You got a decision to make. Well, oh, crap. They hired him. Bull crap. I'm just going to quit. Like, or you're going to stick it out. You're going to grind it out. You know, you're going to have to continue to work because that's the way it works. Let's go back to this model that we have in college football. Like, listen, players, I think one of the things we get lost in is that players are getting their education paid for. Do players need more? Yes. Does Kirk and I support the players continuing to be taken care of more and more in with their clothes and with their food and that kind of stuff? 100%. But they're also getting such a huge benefit in their life. Dude, I don't get the lessons in my life. I don't learn discipline. I don't learn how to handle adversity. I don't learn how to handle difficult times and all this stuff without being able to go through and play college football. I'm not doing the job I'm doing right now if I didn't have the University of Georgia and the things that came along with it. So I think, you know, we have to realize that the players, they're not getting screwed in this whole situation. It's not just they're providing something and nobody else is getting anything at all. They are also getting stuff in return. They're also getting taken care of and they're getting an awesome opportunity at life that a lot of people don't get. So I love what Kirk said. I love how passionately he said it. And you can tell just somebody that cares about the sport and that loves the game. And, you know, this is not going to go away. We're going to have to continue to have these topics as we move along. Cause you know, listen, you saw with the Pac-12, right? This before the season and wanting more and wanting to demand more. I don't think that's going away either. I think you're going to continue to see that. But one thing I'll say, and it's what I alluded to a little while ago. You could take the whole Division II ranks, Division III ranks of college football right now, and you could put those guys in whatever jersey you want, Alabama, whoever. Those Alabama fans are going to cheer from them till the cows come home. And whether they run 4-6 or 4-3, it's not going to matter. They are going to love their team and support their team. So it's just – It's the pageantry. It's the tradition. It's Kirk going to games with his dad. It's supporting those teams for so many years that won't stop no matter who the players are and no matter who the players become.
Yeah, and your name, image, likeness, people always talk about that. if you take that Alabama jersey off, or your experience as an Alabama or Ohio State or Georgia or Michigan player, and you played at Ohio Wesleyan or you played at Worcester College, nobody cares about you. So your name, image, and likeness has a lot to do with the name and image and likeness that you created at whatever school you went to. Let me tell you, man, you're lighting a fuse with me right now, because I grew up without my parents divorced when I was 8 or 9. We didn't have a lot of money. You look at me now today, it's like, I grew up with a silver spoon on third base. Wrong. If I didn't get a scholarship, I would have joined the Army. I was not going to be able to. So I have an appreciation. My sister paid off student loans till she was in her 40s. So I have a full appreciation of what these players get. And I'm with David. They should get what they can get. I think that's awesome. But let me make it very clear. College football players, if you have your head down and your AirPods in and you're not paying attention, guess what? The system will take advantage of you. I promise you. But if you have your head up and your ears open, your eyes open, and you take advantage of the opportunities that every one of these schools provide you, you can take advantage of the system. So it's totally up to the individual player. Be one of these, oh man, it's not fair. The system takes advantage of you. You're right. If you're going to let it, it will. But man, I didn't play it down in the NFL. Ohio State, playing quarterback at Ohio State and being a captain. And I got a chance to play a little bit my junior year, started my senior year, and the doors that were open, because I took advantage of those doors being open, and I stepped through those doors, and I had an awareness about what I was doing. And my life changed forever because I took advantage of that relationship with Ohio State. A day doesn't go by. I'm 51. A day doesn't go by where I don't think about how fortunate I was to make that decision to play football at Ohio State, and the doors that opened for me initially locally and then nationally. That can be you if you're a college football player. That can be you. I don't know whatever field you decide to go to. It could be in banking. It could be a police officer. It could be in, you know, be a fireman. It could be wherever, whatever you want to do, be a dentist. But you got to have an awareness about the opportunity that you have and take advantage of it. Otherwise, you can sit there when you get done and you didn't make the NFL, or you made it for a couple of years, and say, man, that school took advantage of me. The college experience took advantage of me. We're making all this money for everyone except us. If you want to approach it that way, then you're right. But man, what if you decide to open those doors, what an opportunity. David's on national TV. Yeah, he was a great NFL player. But guess what? People, when he's on College Game Day, they see 47. They see him wearing that Georgia uniform and all those memories of all the incredible plays that he made as a Georgia Bulldog. Same with Desmond Howard. Desmond Howard was a Super Bowl MVP. You know what people see when they see Desmond Howard on College Game Day? They see a Heisman pose. And that's what makes college football great. And the doors that are open because of those experiences, you're crazy to look at it like, I'm done. I'm going to work out. I'm going to get ready. I got to take care of me. That'll last for 3 years, maybe. 5 if you're lucky, 8 if you're super lucky, then what? So I would encourage every player to get the roots deep and deep into your program. Be invested into your program, because it's not just 4 years, 3 years, 5 years. It's a lifetime if you do it right. And I just feel bad for these kids who are just looking at life through a lens of 5 years, 10 years, and not looking at it long term. And I get worked up because I feel bad for the players. I feel bad the advice that they're getting. And I wish I could stop it, because not for selfish reasons, but because I want to help these players. I wish we had a way to reach them, and clearly we don't. So
strong stuff there from you guys. By the way, you know, when I made my debut, we had Stuart Scott, we had Van Pelt, all in their prime, and there was no way I was going to say, wait a second, well, how come my stuff is not on the same level as their stuff? No, just shut up and do your show and be
right.
Keep your fingers crossed till you get asked to do the next show. So
exactly.
That's how it's been.
I know that's your approach in life, and I think that's why you continue to grow and continue to get opportunities. That's how life works. You put your nose down and you go to work and you grind, and people recognize that and appreciate that. And then new opportunities open up, and that's why you are where you are, man.
We've gotten so much in this culture of results, results, results. And that's why when you go spend time with great coaches or successful people, it's never about results. it's not about what, it's not about how you played. It's about how you prepared. It's about how you practiced. Like, it's some days it's your day. Some days it's not. Like, you might've had a great week of practice, and then you go, you went on the field and you didn't, you just didn't get opportunities, and the ball didn't come your way and other circumstance happened. That doesn't mean you couldn't have a productive day. Like, it's the same thing. If we want to worry about results and you're always worried about where you are, like right now, you have to be worried about down the road. Where do I want to get? How do I get there? Giving up what I want right now for what I want down the road.
It brings me to a quote from this past weekend where your guy, Pollock, this podcast is about Breece Hall when Pollock talks about him and he raves about him and what he said over the weekend, where it was five-star culture versus five-star players. Now, Breece Hall was a big-time recruit too, but he what he's saying is, hey, what we have here at Iowa State is pretty darn special. And you'll see the results down the road, but it's really the journey and the experience under Matt Campbell. And that quote stood out to the conversation you just brought up. And you guys said, head down, just do your job. We need to celebrate one female who was a pioneer who just put her head down, just did her job. And that was Sarah Fuller over the weekend. I mean, this is 6 days after she was with the Commodores and they won an SEC championship. And now they're, you know, Derek Mason's team dealing with a COVID issue and testing, and they needed a kicker. And granted, she didn't get many opportunities, but she went out there and do your job. I thought she did a great job with that squib kick and become the first female to participate in a Power Five football game. A celebration of her, and also how she handled everything. She wasn't fazed by anything or the moment. And afterwards, the interviews that she did, well done by her, and also setting a great example for a lot of people to just say, hey, listen, if you're ready, we will call upon you because we need you. And she was ready. So congratulations to Sarah. Quick thoughts on that, Herbie, on breaking a barrier here in the Power Five.
Yeah, I mean, it was her to have that opportunity. You know, first of all, great soccer career she's had. And then to be able to come over, try to help Derek Mason out. I know there was a lot of excitement built up around her opportunity, and it was cool that she actually got out on the field. You know, it's one thing to have her in uniform, and it's another thing for her to be able to actually go out and have a chance to kick. I was hoping she'd get a chance to kick a field goal, but it was a lot of fun.
You
to
don't
see
get
that
any of those opportunities at Vanderbilt, not with
that. I hear you, but that was cool to see.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of people that are keeping their fingers crossed who are watching Vanderbilt for the first time saying, wait a second, how come they can't get into field goal territory to do anything, you know?
This is an every Saturday thing. Just welcome aboard the Vanderbilt struggle bus.
Exactly. And then they deal with that great PR. Then Sunday, of course, the firing of Derek Mason. It's a tough environment, tough place to win. We know that. And it makes you appreciate what James Franklin did several years back in that program and finding a way, because again, Vandy is a phenomenal school, and Herb, you know, with the area where you live, it's a great school, phenomenal baseball program, just really tough to win football games there.
It is. And Derek's a good friend, and I love him to death. He'll land on his feet. He's a tremendous coach, great defensive mind, did a lot of great things before he got to Vandy. Of course, he was with David Shaw. Probably most notably as a defense coordinator, he'll have opportunities, whether it's in the NFL or college again. But you're right. It's a tough job. Everybody knows that going in. I think with James Franklin, then he kind of caught lightning in a bottle. I don't have it right in front of me, but to be able to win as many games as he did during that 3-year span, if you go back and look at where Georgia was, where Florida was, and where Tennessee was, I think he hit it at the right time. That's not to take away from what he accomplished, because, you know, those teams took the field and they had athletic ability, and they played with a chip on their shoulder, and they were outstanding. And so he did a tremendous job, and that's what gave him the chance to be able to eventually go to Penn State. But yeah, I don't know who they're going to bring in. I know Clark Lee, who, you know, he went to high school where my boys go to high school here at Montgomery Bell Academy. I think he went to Vandy. So his name's going to be prominent because of the job he's doing for the Notre Dame defense. And he's going to be a head coach, whether it's next season. You know, Jeff Hafley edged him out to get the BC job. So he's a name that's going to be out there. And the way, I don't know, David, you love him. I mean, he's the only defensive coordinator that I've ever come across that doesn't yell. Like, he never yells. He's just more of a conversationalist, more of a, kind of a cerebral approach, XO kind of guy. And some of the players were telling me he's very emotional. Like he hugs on the players, cries with them after big games. And so he's got a very different approach as a defensive guy, but his name will be out there, not just at Vandy, but other places. But yeah, man, that's a tough one, but we all obviously wish the best to Derek and his family.
Why do we usually yell? We usually yell because what we have to say isn't important enough to just say it. I mean, That's really what it boils down to. So good for him.
Okay. Yep. Well, Saturday night, we will see Herbie, of course, game day Saturday morning, but the ABC game, Virginia Tech and Clemson, and we'll see what that offense can do, because it felt like I felt really bad for Pitt early on. I was like, man, Clemson's going to hang 70 here because they're just going to take a ton of anger out of that Florida State situation. So we'll see how that plays out on Saturday. Hey, David, I got an assignment for you on Wednesday. Your dude of the week, it has to be Jared Patterson of Buffalo. Can we break something down from him and celebrate him on Wednesday?
Deal.
All right. Good deal, guys. Safe travels. I'll talk to you guys again.
Boom.
Big thanks to Herb Street and Pollock there. We covered a lot and some passionate opinions about the future of the game and moving forward, what it means for the players as well as for coaches. I love the Herbie Sports Center example. He nailed it. There's no way I'm saying anything if when I jumped in and I got my first and second and third shows, I was just happy to be there and hoping that I was on the schedule the following week. And it turned out well many, many years ago. If you want more football, guys, I suggest let's just continue to social distance as we are in that holiday season and wear a mask. And, of course, always big thanks to Taylor Schwenk, our producer extraordinaire, making sure we can have this podcast for you twice a week. Wednesday, good stuff coming your way. Pollock and I with our picks, and Pollock breaking down Jared Patterson, the Buffalo star running back who broke a big record and continues to run. Buffalo 4-0. The Bulls should be celebrated. We will do that on Wednesday.